Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Rose intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll take your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. As today is a typical Thursday during the course of a week since the Giants are playing on Monday night, so everything has been pushed one day back. The coordinators will talk later today. Tom Coughlin addressed the media. Devon Kennard will not go today at practice. Eric Flowers, though, is going to try to get some work in. So that's at least a positive for the left tackle, but his status very much still up in the air for Monday. So that's the latest in terms of the injury front. We'll look ahead to the Dolphins. We'll talk about some of the key matchups, the statistical trends, obviously what the Giants need to do. And it's going to be a big day on Sunday with all three division rivals in action as well before the Giants even take the field on Monday night. Jeff, how's everything?
Again, yeah. Yes. Good. Important week for the Giants. And you know, we've had this situation before where the Giants knew kind of going into their game what the rest of the division did up to that point. And, you know, when you think about it, it's been good and it's been bad at times. So, but I think results. That, you know, right now with the way that this division is it's shaping up, it's kind of good that they're going to see what they got to do. But more importantly, they know what they have to do. They just have to continue to win and try to keep pace with the rest of this division, what they're trying to do. So. But there's a lot to talk about today, a lot to talk about this Dolphins team, where they're at, what's the game plan to beat these guys, how are the matchups, coming off of the game last week, tons of stuff, Lance. So.
Absolutely, and we want to remind fans that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Jeff, you just mentioned the Miami Dolphins. Let's first start on the offensive side, then we'll move to the defensive side. This is an offense that has struggled to put points on the board. Yeah. 20 or fewer points in each of the last six games. To me, this offense revolves around the running game. When Lamar Miller and company have been productive, it leads to good things. When he has 13 or more carries, they're 5-0. Yep. When he has less than 13 carries, they're 0-7. And also in their five wins, they have nearly 150 yards per game. In their seven losses, they're averaging just about 59 yards rushing. And you know, that's why they've struggled on third down. They've struggled on a few other offensive categories. It's almost as if the running game, Jeff, is the savior for Ryan Tannehill this season.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Ryan Tannehill also since 2012 has been the one guy that's been sacked more times than anybody in the National Football League. When they let go of Lazor, the offensive coordinator, and hired the quarterback coach, Zach Taylor, he came out and said, listen, we're going to get back to running the football. Well, you know, like the stat that you just said pretty much shows you that when they run the football that they can, you know, they win games. And, you know, with Miller, he's the guy that can get it done. He reminds me a lot of Shady McCoy. He's got that cutback speed. But, you know, really, he's one of those types of players that we talk about all the time with the Giants about getting rhythm and getting in that kind of a zone as a running back. This guy needs those kind of carries to get you through a game because when you abandon him, he kind of goes in the closet and then you pull him back out and it doesn't go well for him. He also can catch the football out of the backfield. But this offense is just, you know, you're looking over some of the rankings here. They're 28th in total offense, 27th in scoring. They're 31st on third down.
28%.
And they're giving up their 25th in the league in sacks. So, you know, when you talk about matchups, which we do, you look at the defense for the Giants and what can they attack here. First of all, they got to be able to stop the run. They're not great at running the football, but they're going to try and do it against the Giants, okay? The other thing is that third down. I mean, the Giants are not good on third down either. The Giants' defense is, by the way, 31st. So something's going to give there.
Correct, yeah.
And, you know, but Tannehill is the kind of guy where you have to keep him in the pocket because he can get outside and run on you. And I think that with them running the football, setting up play action, if he gets outside, he's going to make some yards with his feet. But defensively, this could be the week, and really I think last week was by far the best that the defense has gotten after the quarterback. Put a lot of hits on Fitzpatrick last week, got three sacks, and I think this is the week that now the JPP is kind of – he's had a preseason, if you will. He's had four games under his belt, and now he's kind of coming into his own, and I think that's helping this defense.
Well, the pass rush has certainly increased, as you just touched on, Jeff. Six sacks in the last three games. They only had nine sacks in the first nine games. And the Giants have taken advantage of offensive lines, Jeff, that are a little bit banged up like New England. Miami's offensive line has given up over 30 sacks this season, tied for eighth most. They're banged up themselves. They're going to be without their starting right tackle. You know, this is an attractive matchup for the Giants pass rush. And while, you know, I sort of shy away from attractive matchups because, as you know, Jeff, this season sometimes the Giants
haven't been able
to take advantage of that. The one thing, though, that I think they have done a good job capitalizing on is offensive lines that have been up and down. And Miami, I would throw in that same category as New England, very shaky in terms of their performance each and every week.
And that's all about game planning and matchup. So we're going to have to see what they're going to do. I mean, this Colin Jenkins and JPP and Robert Ayers, all these guys are healthy. They got to get after Tannehill. But I think the key to this game is going to be to stop the run, because they're going to try to run the football with Lamar Miller, because the stat that you just said at the beginning of the open, this team wins football games when they run the football. And that's what they're going to try to do, and they got to be able to stop it. You know, what's missing, and that's a, you know, the numbers really don't lie, and I think that it goes to show you how there is an improvement in the sack category over the last couple games. But that's just got to keep continuing. And what I'd like to see is not only to continue that trend, but I would like to see that strip sack fumble, if you will, that comes at the end of the game when this team is trying to finish, as we call everybody has been saying, finish. That's, to me, is what's missing with this defensive line. Get that play at the end of the game. It happened last night in the Cardinal-Minnesota game, if you stayed up for it. Teddy Bridgewater was driving down at the end of the game. The Cardinals had a strip sack. Game over. That's what you call finishing. That's what you call an 11-2 team, and that's how they finish. That's what's been missing with this defensive line, in my opinion. Which, by the way, everything on this show is my opinion.
If that wasn't clear enough.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that.
Well, and what you also touched on, Jeff, is related to takeaways, which has been a key component to the defense. It's not so much the strip sack to seal the game, just takeaways in general.
Take it away, yeah. And on the flip side of it, you look at the way, and it's in here. I'm not going to go flipping through it, so I'm not going to. But you look at the first part of this season where the Giants were kind of doing okay offensively. It's actually in here. I want to make
sure. How
you
going to go and look?
As far as I saw it in here.
What number are you looking for?
The takeaways.
The takeaways on the season?
Giveaways on offense. The giveaways for the Giants offense when they were the first nine games, okay? And where is it? Well, this is on Monday Night Football.
Well, they got 10 on the season in terms of the giveaways in the first half.
Here it is right here. The first five games, this offense only gave it away three times. The last seven, they've given it away 11.
Yeah.
Okay, and Eli's, his percentage is going back to, that's the Monday Night Football, but just giving it away this season right here. Look at this. First eight games, his passer rating 99.9, so almost 100. 76 the last four games, okay? He's 1-3 in the last four and 4-4 in the first. And look at his completion percentage, 66% in the first eight games of the season. He's down to 55%. So, you know, towards the second half of the season, Eli has really struggled. And, you know, you got to look at that as far as how this offense is playing. The other thing is we could talk an hour and two on the running game here. But that, you know, hopefully the Giants on the flip side of this game. Okay, let's look at the Miami defense, the run. They are 30th against the rush. Hello. I think they're going to be trying to run the football today or Monday night too. So there's a game plan for you. Hint, hint.
Well, but Jeff, here's the thing, and this goes back to the trends that we saw this season. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the Redskins were 30th against the run.
I know.
And then look at what happened in that contest. So, you know,
they got down 17-0.
Correct. So that did impact.
Take
that's a great
game plan and just throw that out the court. You know.
But still, sometimes the numbers do look attractive. As I pointed out with the Dolphins' offensive line, it's all about execution.
And they have to go in with something. They got to come in with some substance to the players and say, guys, here we go. here you go. Listen and watch the film. This is our game plan. Let's execute it. Which, by the way, is a big word these days in the Giants or in the Giants team is execution. You know, if they could execute these plays, if they could have executed that fourth and two play down on the goal line, the rub route, which we've seen it a million times. It was Dwayne Harris and it was Reuben Randall trying to run that route, and it didn't execute. It didn't work. So execution, that's part of the game. It really is.
Offensively, in terms of execution, get a little bit more continuity because, as you pointed out, Jeff, what those numbers tell me, the fact that the giveaways are going up, the completion percentage is going down, it shows me that, hey, the offense, it's clear, has pressure on itself,
yes,
especially with the way the defense has been playing. But when the offense doesn't do its job, Jeff, and the offense is not as consistent and is not protecting the football, then who are you turning to at this point? That's an issue. So that's why it's so important for the offense to get back on track in a game like this so that you cushion a lead and you don't put your defense in a precarious situation.
And you hit it there. You know, play with the lead. Let's get this team out in front at the beginning of the game and see how you can go and play from there. This Dolphins team is, you know, Monday night they're bringing back the top 50 players of all time for the Dolphins. So there's going to be a little bit of magic in the air there. So, you know, this team is playing for their jobs, this Dolphins team. They're still in the playoff hunt, but they're not going to go to the playoffs. But this coaching staff, this coach is coaching for their jobs. These players are coaching for their jobs. And it's a big game for these guys. So,
and it's national television,
sure,
opportunity to make a statement like anybody else would tell you, since they have limited opportunities to play on Monday Night Football.
No question. And I just think that this Giants team, as Coach Coughlin is doing jumping jacks in team meeting rooms and press conferences, because he's trying to get these guys to understand that, you know what, we got four games to play. We're tied for first place, or at least have a share of it. What are you going to do? You throw your skirt up and go home? Let's go. I mean, we got four games to play. We got a division game at the end of this thing. Which, by the way, could be one of the biggest games of the season for the Giants, the way that this season is shaping up to be. So you never know, but you got to win this one on Monday night against the Dolphins. And there's no question in my mind that every one of these players should be preparing the way that they have to go down there and play and beat the Dolphins on the road. No distractions.
Yes.
You're not at home. You're going to go on the road. It's just all 53 of the players and coaches in their hotel, sitting out on South Beach, waiting for the game, whatever they're doing. You know, make sure that you're ready to play this game on Monday night.
Before we get to the phone lines at 201-939-4513, you just mentioned the jumping jacks, Jeff. I'm curious, did Tom ever unleash anything in a meeting room when you were on the team of notice that you were willing to share or that jumps out to you?
Well, I don't remember offhand, but he does, not physically. But he has unloaded some stuff on film or has shown some. I'll never forget the one that when we were in 2007, he brought out the mountain. And there was this mountain, you know, and it was climbing. And he had the Super Bowl at the very top, and then he had the NFC Championship and how we were climbing up this mountain, you know.
Now, this was towards the end of the regular season?
This is towards the end when we're like how close we were. Because remember, we were 9-7 that year and went to the playoffs. So we weren't a great team. You know, we weren't the 10-2 and, you know, whatever, or 14-2. We were kind of but we had to make that push in December. And this is when it came out, four games left. Where are we? And, you know, he brought that mountain with us the rest of the year.
Really?
Next week, we won a game. He put us back on the mountain. We're just climbing that thing. And then we were in the playoffs. We went down to Tampa Bay, another ascend. And then, certainly when we got to Arizona, we were at the top of the mountain. We had one more step, and that was to win the thing, and we did. So
now, was this a photograph, or
was this
actually a real?
It was a photograph. It was a photograph.
Okay.
It was a slide, you know, put up on the board, and Ed Triggs, who does a lot of the work for Coach Coughlin, had you know, put it together, and it was. But jumping jacks, no,
that you haven't seen.
But in my 22 years in football, I saw a lot of crazy things in the locker room. A lot. I mean, I saw Buddy Ryan put a chair through a chalkboard one time at halftime. I've seen players getting fights at halftime, but I have, you know, we're not going that far here.
No, not at all. Yes. All right. With that being said, let's head to the phone lines here on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Jeff Eagles. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us. Let's start things off with Scott in D.C. Scott, what's happening?
Gentlemen, hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What do you have for us, Scott?
Thanks to the call screener for taking my call. My question is this. What are three mistakes or errors that New York Giants ownership, management, or coaching has made in the last three seasons?
I know. I bet you have the answer.
No, I'm interested in your expert opinion.
What were the question again? It was what is ownership? Are there three problems they've done?
Are there any mistakes that ownership, management, or coaching has made in the last three seasons?
Well, I mean, it just depends on who you're asking the question to. I mean, it's as far as, you know, you're going back and looking in the draft, you're looking at, you know, the way this team has had injuries, some of the, you know, the coaching changes, all those kinds of things go into it. You know, I'm sure you can come up with three mistakes, if you will, that you might say that they had made and some others may not. So we're not at liberty to really talk a lot about that. So, you know, I mean, it's up. What do you think some of the mistakes they have made on your mind is?
Well, I guess, you know, to be frank, I'm frustrated that we had a Super Bowl winning team in 2011. And since that time, they've gone 9-7, 7-9, 6-10, 5-7. There's a trend. They've taken a Super Bowl winning product, and when I say they, I don't know who to point the finger to. That's why I asked the question. But there are only three options. You got ownership, you got management, and you got coaching.
Sure.
Now there are players. Obviously, the players need to perform, but you know, I don't find much value in talking about particular players. You can't talk about players. You can't criticize any of the players, I guess, because, you know, you're paid by the team. You can't criticize ownership, management, or coaching either. But I'm trying to grapple with how we got a franchise 4 years ago from the top of the summit of the mountain to where they are now, which is at the bottom of the heap of the worst division in professional football.
Well, I'll sum it up with this, and I think that, you know, you got to have a little bit of onus on the part of all three of those, if you will. You know, I mean, I think if you outlined all three of them up, they would all say to you, hey, could we have done this better? Yes. Could we have done this better? Yeah. And I think everyone from, you know, Mr. Mara down to Jerry Reese to Tom Coughlin, I think that it goes without saying that in the National Football League, not just the Giants, but every football team, is built on depth. And the guys that when you have players that can back one another up, you're hoping that you're developing that lower part of your roster so that one day those guys can be starters. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't pan out. Some teams it does. You know how difficult it is to win in the National Football League, let alone go to Super Bowls. And, you know, to get back to that level, there's certainly a lot of work to do because this is a 5-7 team. Let's not, you know, get fooled on this. But so we got to go from there. That, I guess that's about okay. as best
well,
I could.
I just want to clarify. I have the utmost respect for Mr. Mara. I have the utmost respect for Mr. Reese, and I don't think they can find someone better than Coughlin. That's not where I'm coming from. Where I'm coming from is the frustration of what happened in the 70s, what happened until the mid-80s. They're in the middle of the pack, and it doesn't seem that there's a plan to go forward. Normally, the way you go forward is you hit the nail on the head, Jeff. You build the roster.
Yep.
Now, you know, with the salary cap and the CBA, things have changed, but these rules apply to each and every one of the franchises in professional football. Some of them seem to have been able to figure out how to make it work for them.
Some.
And this one seems to be treading water.
But I would say, and I think you make a great point with the rules and how things work these days. If you look at the parity, and it's a bad parity, if in my opinion, the football today, because there are a lot of 5-7 teams, and you know there's a lot of bad teams out there in the National Football League this year. So collectively, I think a lot of organizations are looking at the same things from a fan standpoint that you are, not just the Giants. So.
And Scott,
appreciate it.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Thank you. Phone call. And, you know, one thing that I was going to throw out, Jeff, Now, keep in mind, that 2011 team was 9-7.
Yep.
They were 7-7 entering the last 2 weeks of the season. They win that. You know, the division was very close again that season, and then they got hot, and they went in. But, you know, it's not as if we went from a 14-2 team to all of a sudden, you know, a 5-7 team heading into the final few weeks. You know, they were very fortunate that they got healthy at the right time, things clicked, and they surged. And we've seen that a lot. Think about how many wild card teams have won Super Bowls in recent history. You know, it's not necessarily the overall record. It's when you're playing your best football.
No question. I mean, actually, by the way, this is the month when it happens. This is when you make that surge. And, you know, there's teams that are looking from the outside in right now that all they're looking forward to is getting through the season and getting to building their draft up what they're going to do next year. Because there are guys that – there's teams in the league that aren't sitting here in December going to and having four games left saying we're in first place. Okay, yeah, we're 5-7. I get all that. I understand all that. But, by the way, alert, somebody in the National Football League East is going to go to the playoffs. So I don't know if the Redskins, the Eagles, the Cowboys, and anybody in the Giants are listening to me. One of those four teams, boys, are going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Does anybody want it?
That's the big question. Who wants it? Because it's for the taking right now.
And like you said, 2007, 2011, prime examples. If you can get healthy and you can get some momentum and some you know, just kind of like just get into the playoffs, you never know what's going to happen. Now, I can tell you this. This is a 5-7 football team. It could be 10-2. That stat that we heard this week, if it was only played in 58 minutes, and someone's like, let me just tell you something, Lance. I would have made a lot more money in my career if I had gone to the GMs and said, you know what, my net average would have been this if DeSean Jackson didn't take it back to the house, or I didn't get a punt block. You know, just if I can you pay me millions of dollars more? Just if, you don't get paid on if and buts and candies and nuts, right? What's the other line?
We all have a happy Christmas?
Yeah, there it is.
No, it's 60 minutes of football. That's it.
Finish.
It's not 59:30. It's not 59:45. Right. It's 60 minutes of football. Tom Coughlin will be the first one to tell you that. To finish, the other thing I wanted to add to the question that Scott was presenting in terms of, you know, what's happened since 2011, Jeff, you know, it's also been somewhat of a transitional period where, you know, they've rebuilt the offensive line. Remember, a lot of the guys you played with slowly retired.
Yeah,
you don't
one
just
at a time.
All of a sudden bring five guys in at once. So they've done that through the draft. They've done that through free agency. That takes time. On the flip side, also, the defensive line has also gone through transition. Michael Strahan left.
Yeah.
You know, Justin Tuck, OCU Mignora. Yeah. You slowly have to replace those players.
Freddie Robin.
It doesn't happen. Linville Joseph's another one, although they did draft Jonathan Hankins. So what I'm saying is that sometimes is a process. You don't bring in five new guys after one season a little bit at a time. And you could say that about most other teams, too, that have had to transition from one period of an offensive line to another. That's what happened since 2011. We slowly saw the end of a unit that had been so consistent, had been so healthy. Now you're bringing in some younger guys, not nearly as much experience. Same thing can be said for the defensive line. So, you know, that's the period right now. You just hope that you maintain health, and this core is going to be what can build upon moving forward.
You look at the trend, too, over the years, the team that goes to the Super Bowl, there's a percentage of it that doesn't even make the Super Bowl, the playoffs next year. I mean, that was kind of one of those stats you're like, what? You scratch your head, because what happens is all your free agents on a Super Bowl team leave because they've just went to the Super Bowl, and obviously other teams are thinking that they're that good of players, and then you start to, you know, the downfall of your team. But there is a certain point in time where, you know, you start going down, you got to start coming back up. And the Giants, you know, 07 to 11, that four-year run, that, you know, boom. And now we're kind of in that cycle. And where is this team going? Is it going up or is it going down? And Coach Coughlin will always tell you, you know, you're either going this or you're going down. You don't do this. You don't do this. You can't.
No, it's very difficult. Let's head back to the phone lines. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hi, Abdul.
Hey, guys. I haven't called in a little while because of my frustration and kind of my apathy. I felt, you know, after a few years of, as a caller before just mentioned, of 9-7s and 5-7s and not seeing any improvement, I was kind of just, you know, just kind of fed up. And then Monday night hit, and we're back alive, you know? And but still, I didn't have much to say because I just didn't see much change. But yesterday I was looking to the show, and some one of the callers asked Howard Cross if it's ever the coach's fault about losing. And I'm not sure if you guys are listening, but Howard Cross basically said, no, it's about execution. You know, the coach, he's like, I don't remember the last time Tom Coughlin made a tackle or Tom Coughlin made an interception. You know, it's about the players doing their job, which I agree. You know, I think you have the greatest game plan, but if you don't have the players to perform the game plan, it doesn't matter. And that led me to back to my, I guess, my number one issue with the Giants the past few years has been the talent level on the field. Just how we lack it, you know. And you guys were just talking about 2007 and 2011. We've had similar records, but the one difference is if you look at the rosters, we had Pro Bowl players on that team, and you know, all stars on that team. That when they were healthy and when we finally gelled together, we were able to lift up our level in play because we had players that were capable of doing good. And if you look at our roster right now, I'm not sure if we have that. I'm not sure. I think we have one or two players here or there that are Pro Bowl, you know, Eli, of course, and Odell, of course. On defense, I don't see anyone who's more than average. And, you know, and I don't want to point fingers, because I'm not sure if that does anything good, if that just shows frustration. But I'm just really concerned about how we are talent level and how we acquire players. And I think that's our biggest problem. And I just don't see that changing, and that's what gets me really upset. I'm not sure if I want Reese to go, because at this point, if we blow this up, I think that'll be more detrimental than better. You know, I think if we fire Coughlin, if we get a whole new offense, a whole new defense, and I see that setting us back a few years, where I think we're one or two players away to being a good team. You know, that stat you just put up, if we erase 75 seconds of the game, we'd be 10-2. And that shows that we're one or two players away.
You know, Abdul? Let me ask you a question.
Sorry, go ahead.
With your frustration, I'm just curious what you think about this. Do you think you're more frustrated with the depth of this team or actually the guys that are starting on this team, their level of play?
Both.
Yeah.
No, you can't be both.
You can't do both.
Well, okay.
It's either or.
It sounds like one of my kids. You want this can, and then they say both.
Got to pick.
I'm not happy with Merriweather. I'm not happy with linebacking.
Yep.
I'm not, you know, so right there. And then if you look at the depth on those, our backups are bad too.
So collectively between the two, that's kind of where you're seeing you're seeing that there's a little bit of lack of talent, if you will, is what's going on. So
our defense is not an NFL defense. You know, it's not. And that's so frustrating to me because, you know, nothing, you know, I'm not saying Reese has tried. I'm not saying this guy's incompetent, that he doesn't try, that he really tries, but he just it's a collective, because I know it's not just him. It's the scouts.
Yeah.
It's people that he leans on. So I just people saying it's Reese's fault. It's not one man's fault. It's a institutional issue that, you know, since, you know, if you look at the 2007-2011 teams were players that were picked by the previous GM. And since then, it's been on him. It's been on Reese's clock. And he's not been able to produce – a winning product.
Abdul, in fairness, and I'll let you continue, you know, when you say that the previous GM selected those players, keep in mind, Jerry Reese has been with the organization within the previous regime, so he was part of that department.
Yeah.
So he helped select those players, too, in fairness.
At his desk. He put his input in, but Ernie Arcozy, he was the one that made the final decision. It wasn't Reese. Reese was part of the
well, no, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but your statement previously was that it's not one man that ultimately makes the decision. So what I'm saying is Reese also helped select all of those other players that helped win Super Bowls. That's the point. I'm saying that it was a collective decision.
I get you. I understand you, and I'm sure that's why he got the job. He wanted that, you know, seamless transition between Ernie Arcozy and Reese. I get it, but I just look at look at the two teams last night who played, Arizona and Minnesota. They're comparable to the New York. They've both been kind of middle, you know, of the pack teams. And if you look at those two teams in the past, since 2011 and now, they've gotten better. You know, the defense on Minnesota, I live here, so I get the feedback. They have a good safety. A lot of them are hurt right now. They're kind of hurt. But if you look at their starting 11, they've gotten better through the draft. depth and through free agency. Arizona, oh my God, you know they, you know, they were horrible. And that their team, they have safeties that can cover, their linebackers to cover, tight ends, you know, and they picked around the same where same places where the Giants have picked. And I know football is, you know, it's almost a coin flip. And I'm thinking I want to give this regime one more chance. Because I think we're one or two players away from being a 10-2 team. And this coming offseason is going to be the biggest one in the next 5 years. It'll either steer us to wasting Eli's last four years or us making a run to a couple more Super Bowls. And I just hope that Breece is the right man for the job, because this offseason we have a lot of money, we have cap space, but it's extremely important for us to make the right jobs. And I hope he's the right man to do it.
All right, Abdul.
That's all I'm going to say.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And Jeff, you know, part of what Abdul is mentioning and part of what you were touching on, a big part in the NFL to maintain consistency is surviving injuries. I mean, that's a big part of it. Everybody deals with injuries. Everybody loses starters. But how can you adjust to losing impactful players? I mean, that's the biggest difference in this league.
You can't. So here's how it works. If you have your starters, all 22 of them, okay, that's a little bit less than half of your whole roster, okay? So as soon as those guys on that 22 people, below them are your backups, their development guys that, you know, maybe late round draft picks, some free agents that made the team, last year's draft picks, you know. What happens is as you start to get hurt on the 22, those guys that are below that, they start moving up quicker than they should. Experience becomes a factor. Now, the most important thing is it's not so much that. It's what happens now below. Now you're going to get in practice squad players to replace those guys that are in your middle tier that were draft picks, and building the foundation of your team through the draft. Well, now you're building your foundation team through street free agents that came off of the practice squad, all because of what you just said. You get injuries at these certain positions. And, you know, that is kind of – and I'm not defending anyone here. I'm just trying to tell you, and this isn't just the Giants. This is how the National Football League teams work. The teams that have that middle tier of players that are good, that can replace the starters, the better they're going to be through the attrition of what's happening with the injuries and going forward in the season. It just seems that the Giants, like, once again, the last 4 years in a row, I saw this stats yesterday – the Giants are the most injured team in 4 years in a row now. So that's why it's kind of hypersensitive to what we're talking about with injuries with the Giants. It comes to a point where you can't keep replenishing those types of players to come in here and do this kind of stuff. So it's a little bit of bad luck. It's a little bit of hit or miss on personnel, and it's not a perfect science. And neither every team is not the same way, and there are some better guys that you hit or miss on. But that's kind of the evolution of what's going on here. And the team that stays healthy or gets healthy in December and moving into the playoffs is going to win.
Remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Big Ed in Maryland. Big Ed, what's happening?
Big Ed.
What's up, Big Lance and Big Jeff? What's up, fellas?
What's happening, Big Ed?
Doing
well.
We're doing
good. How about yourself?
Lance and John did a switcheroo.
What am I doing? What am I doing?
Well,
you know what, fellas? I'm going to call this title history. I said to my man, I was talking practice, but I thought about it while we've been talking and listening to everybody and everything. And I'm going to go with history. Hey, Jeff, check this out.
Okay. I got my pen. I need to write this down.
Yeah, you might want to.
All right.
This is quite interesting how this is about to unfold. So everybody listen carefully as this story is about to be told.
Oh, boy.
Is this crystal ball?
We're going all the way. Don't know how I see it, but I'm just going to say it.
I love it.
All right? We're going to Miami. Check this out, y'all.
All right.
To watch them celebrate the 72 undefeated Dolphins, the only undefeated team in NFL history. Why do I feel that we can ready to go repeat history? Why do I feel we can go 9-7 and 3-3 in the division? Take the division and win the whole thing again. All because of
history.
Seeing some team that never lost a game that whole season. You know what's so special about that, y'all? Let me share even more special history. I was born then. That 72 Dolphin run, they did it all in 71.
You're dating yourself, Pighead. You got to be careful.
Okay? I'm a diehard Giants fan to the end. I won't stop until we not win it. We got to be winning because that's just how we are. But it's just so ironic because the reason why I say it, not only are we going to sit there and watch them celebrate them 72 Dolphins, we're going to turn around and go play at home against an undefeated Carolina Panthers team that we'll beat. Why? Because we want to knock off anybody that's undefeated. What do y'all think of that?
I like the optimism, Big Ed.
Okay.
Well, listen,
you like that, right?
That's what they're going to need to do, sir, and they're going to have to start winning games. No argument there.
Okay, and how do you win those games? How do you win those games? You don't make Odell Beckham your scapegoat to win the thing at the last second. That's desperation. Coach knows it. Players know it. Strategy knows it. Play to your strengths, not to your weaknesses. It's just that simple. Play to your strengths, not your weaknesses. Odell is a great player. We do want him to get the ball, but he cannot dictate if we win the game. We have to win the game before the game is even at the end. We don't wait to get to the end of the game and think, oh, now we're going to come back and win the game. No.
Yeah, get a lead.
This is Monday
get
Night Football, everybody watching. Everybody's watching. Okay? It's just that simple.
All right, Big Ed.
Said it before. They listen to us. No, what you going to say?
No, I was just going to let you finish up your point.
Yeah,
we want to move along to get some other callers in. But what else you got?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I'll be quick about it. Thank you guys for letting me come on and rock it like we do.
You got it, Big Ed.
All right, Big Ed.
Monday night, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
It's the beginning of the new thing.
4-0. 4-0 from here on out. Undefeated.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. The point about Odell Beckham and the targets, there is a bit of a disparity, Jeff, in the last few games in terms of Odell, what he's seeing versus what some other receivers are doing. And Eli Manning was asked about this in the locker room throughout the week, and you know, they were pressing him, the media, about, you know, how important is it to find that second option, that consistent second option?
Okay.
Let me be a little bit more specific. And he explained, and you can even shed some light on this, you know, every play call, he's got different reads.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's looking at the defense and so forth. Doesn't mean that Odell Beckham's the first read. It just means how the defense is reacting. It's not as if they're force-feeding the ball to Odell Beckham. It's just that, hey, if that's the best option based on the read, he's going to throw it to Odell Beckham compared to whoever else is out there.
Well, it also goes along with this, too. I see it in this sense, okay? And I won't tell you – I won't say who or what or why. But in that scenario that you just said, and I'm the quarterback, and I'm going to go through my progressions, okay? If the first two progressions are not running their routes the way they should be, or they're taking a play off here or there, and for some reason that Odell Beckham is my third option, well, I know that Odell Beckham doesn't take plays off. I know that he runs every route, everything that he's supposed to do. I'm a quarterback. I'm going to go to that guy that I know that's going to be there and where he's supposed to be. That's all I'll say. And I think that sometimes that is the progression that he is talking about. Not every play, it's Odell Beckham 1, you know, Randall 2 and Harris 3 and Ty 4th or whatever it is. They're all – it could be that way, but then I get up to the line of scrimmage and I look and the coverage is there. Well, now guess what? Now the coverage is dictating my progression. It's no longer Odell Beckham in that order I just told you. Now it's Will Ty, maybe Randall, and then Beckham because of the coverages they're put in. So Odell Beckham does such a great job of getting open, whether there's 1, 2, or 3 guys. – If I'm a quarterback and the guy's open, I'm going to throw it to him. It happens to be Odell Beckham, and I also know this. He's going to make a play when I get it
correct
to him.
Yeah, he's going to go up and fight for the ball
to
help out
his
quarterback. Absolutely. And we've seen that time and time again, especially with his big play capability, which has been on a hot streak as of late, 5 straight games with 100 yards. However, with that being said, and I threw out this stat early in the week, in all of these 100-yard games, Jeff, though, the Giants are only 5-9. Which means that, yes, there is that urgency factor to get somebody else going, get the running game going, because the more balance the Giants have, that record improves dramatically compared to when it's a one-man show with Odell Beckham.
And if this team could ever get balanced, I think that, you know, offensively, this would be a pretty juggernaut of an offense. I really do. I just, they have no balance in the running game or in the passing game. I mean, their balance is, there is none. So it's, you know, it's difficult for a quarterback to know that he can only really throw to one or two receivers and you can't have a running game to support anything else. And that's got to be really difficult offensively.
And that's why, to me, Jeff, the importance of Shane Vereen, I think, can really be an important part of the narrative moving forward, because if you can't necessarily get that consistency maybe out of the receiving core, and, you know, Will Tye has shown flashes here or there, you know, Vereen is so consistent, so crafty, that even a simple dump-off to him, Jeff,
I know,
makes third downs manageable and keeps the chains moving.
It does, and I just think that, you know, you can't go to the well that often, and because teams are just smart. They're going to take it away sooner enough, but... I would have liked to see, you know, beginning of the season, we saw a lot more out of Vereen, and I don't know if, you know, what's going on lately, but whether it's the defense is keying on it on certain downs, they're keying it on certain personnel packages, which you hear Tom Coughlin talk about all the time with those four running backs. Down and distance dictate personnel, and so I think that a lot of times you see that type of subbing in and out because of the play call. When you get a zero or negative yards on the first down play, that affects second, third, and fourth down going forward. So that's kind of, you know, I don't know if you probably have heard this, fans have probably heard this before, but a lot of the West Coast offense back when Bill Walsh had put it in, they scripted the first 15 plays of the game, and they did not change it. They ran those 15 plays, whatever it was, and they didn't go away from it. And so what happens is, sometimes those five or six plays at the beginning of the game, they all of a sudden you got to change it up again because you're not getting the production that you're getting on those other on the runs. Calling plays in a football game is an art. It really is, and it's something that takes a lot of time and experience to do. So.
And even Ben McAdoo mentioned that all those years that he was on the Green Bay staff, he'd watch Mike McCarthy and Joe Philbin, who was there at one point, the former Dolphins coach. It takes years sometimes just to hone that craft or understand how you react to defenses and so forth.
And understand that, you know, by no means am I saying I'm an offensive coordinator. But, you know, even in junior football, I will tell you that, you know, I call the plays in junior football and, you know, you're constantly looking ahead. And it's sometimes it's tough to pay attention to the play on the field because you're kind of setting up yourself to, okay, look, if it's second and nine, okay, if we get the first down, I know this is my first down plays, but and you're kind of in your mind kind of going over what you need to do, and you're always one play ahead, and it's a tough thing. It's tough. If you go down on a football game and you're on the sideline watching a football game live from the sideline, there is so much going on. Not to mention the game in front of you, but the things on the sideline and stuff. And you got that big play, that big sheet that's usually like this big.
I mean, mammoth.
How do these guys, you know? They said it on air. Phil Simms said last night that even in a short week, that Bruce Arians had 175 plays from Monday till Thursday's game.
It's crazy.
You run 70 in a game. What do you need 175?
Likes to have options, apparently.
At the 12th week of the season, for God's sakes. Come on. Let's get back to the
All calls. Right, let's head to the phone lines. Connor, what's happening, Connor?
Hey, man, how are you doing?
Doing well, Connor. What do you got for us?
Man, it was like a statement slash question, man. You know, it's my first time being on Giants Online, you know.
Good, welcome.
Welcome, yeah.
I was wondering, all right, so there's a lot of people slash, you know, players going to free agency next year. We can't get the job done now, so how is it going to be next year? You know, Prince Mukamara, JPP, you know, Brandon Merriweather, just a whole lot of others. You know, they're all going to be on free agency. We're looking for other people, and we can't get the job done now. So,
well, I think the whole key to free agency is try to build your team better than it was the year before by going out and getting players that they feel can replace the ones that didn't, exactly what you just said. They didn't get it done here, so we're going to go find out and try to find somebody else that can do it. That's kind of how free agency works. It's the first thing they do because it's in the progression of the off season. You got free agency, and then you got the draft. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And going along with we didn't get it done this year, I was wondering, you know, like, it can't be, you know, just one player. You know, you can't just blame it or put your finger on it, you know, on one player. You have to just take it all. I don't know what I'm saying.
All right, it looks like we lost Connor, but do appreciate the phone call. And listen, if you look at all of these close games, and the fans, they're familiar with the stats. You threw it out earlier. You know, all of these nail biters. Every single game, Jeff, a defensive play here, a special teams play there, an offensive play here. It's not as if one player was associated with all of these last-second plays, and that's why the ball didn't bounce the Giants' way. So you could spread it across the board. Little things, minute things, execution, urgency, catching the football. I mean, you could throw it all around this team.
Everything. It comes down to play calling. It comes down to time management. It comes down to individual effort. When we talk about that X's and O's, playing above the X's and O's. All those are ingredients, if you will, to throw into a recipe for either success or not. And when part of those ingredients don't mix or not going well, you're gonna get a cake that tastes like really horrible. And that's your 5-7 football team. When you get a 10-2 team like the Cardinals, they're very well coached. They've got good depth. They got good players. They got guys making above the X's and O's, and they, you know, that's where you get your good tasting cake. So that is, you know, what he was talking about. He actually made a good point. Is if you got players in the team now that aren't really that good, and what are we going to do about those positions next year? But that's all about, you know, the management and the scouting department going out and getting free agent players, and luckily you're able to do that. And some teams have better free agency periods than others, and it's all graded, and you know the fans do it. We'll see what happens next year. But hey, they still got four games to play in this year. So,
and Jeff, you brought up the Arizona Cardinals, and I just want to use this team as an example because they only have two losses. But, you know, a record sometimes doesn't indicate whether or not they played close games. Did they beat everybody up by 20 points? If you look at Arizona's schedule, they've won a lot of close affairs. But the difference between, for example, the Giants and the Cardinals, putting talent and roster aside, it's the execution in key moments to seal a game. For example, last night you referred to that strip sack by Dwight Freeney.
Yeah,
it's a 3-point game. If Teddy Bridgewater holds on to the football, they're at least attempting a game-tying field goal.
Sure.
That game could very well go into overtime. If you look at some of these other games on the schedule, hey, they lost 24-22 to the St. Louis Rams. You know, little play here or there for the Arizona Cardinals caused in that contest. San Francisco, 6-point game. 34-31 against the Cincinnati Bengals. Another key play here or there down the stretch.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Giants have been in games.
Regardless of if you compare
the Eagles game. If you want to compare the Giants to the Cardinals roster, I understand there's some differences there. But the point is, they've been competitive, the Giants. But the difference between the Arizona Cardinals and the New York Giants is crunch time, 2 minutes left in a football game, offense, defense, special teams. When the opportunity presents itself, the plays are being made.
Right. And that's what I was saying to earlier is where, you know, that's what's missing on this defensive side is that big play element that Coach Coughlin talks about all the time. Guys, you know, and you hear the, you know, big players make big plays in big games. That kind of sequence that you want to get somebody to do that, that's been missing. The years that this team has gone to the Super Bowls or even deep in the playoffs, if you will, they've got big plays out of their big players in certain times of the game. The most critical, Dwight Freeney. Really? I mean, the guy.
He's up there, yeah. He's a lot of mileage on his legs.
But he comes in and makes a play in a critical moment of the game, you know. And Coach Coughlin was talking about JPP last week where he thought that maybe one of those tip balls could have been an interception, you know. Those are the things that Tom Coughlin is grasping right now. He's saying, please, just one of you guys do something like that. And it could turn it around. Now, I've referenced this before on a team that started out 0-2 and then the fourth week of the season to go to Buffalo and have a goal line stand down there. I thought that was kind of a play that you can see elevate a team. You know, that's what this team needs Monday night. If they're in a close game, to prove to themselves that they can finish a game and to prove to themselves that they can make big plays to win games, that will inject some confidence and some enthusiasm in a team that's fighting for a playoff spot in a division win here.
And with that being said, Jeff, I think it goes back to even your initial point. if they do make the play, let's say in the Dolphins game, then the task at hand, though, is how do you then take that momentum carried over? Because the Buffalo game earlier this season, you know, then you had a nail-biter with San Francisco.
But they won it.
They did win that game, but then all of a sudden you get blown out by Philadelphia.
Right.
So the key is it's not so much doing it in one game, it's then having some consistency here in this four-game stretch.
Right. Right, and that's been the problem. There's been no consistency in that category, but nothing to say that can't make a big play in the Dolphins game and then go next week to Carolina. We know how this team. I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but we know how this team plays up or down to their opponent. You just look at the New England game this year. This team played its best football that you've seen them play all year against the New England Patriots, and you know unfortunately they came out on the losing side of it, but man, I'll tell you, coming out of that game, you're sitting there saying to yourself, this team can play. Maybe this is what takes, and then look what happens. You know?
Want to try to squeeze in a few more phone calls here as we get closer to the end of the program. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hi, Len. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing well, Len.
Listen, just real quick, couple of things. sometime in the off season when things slow down, Google Sid Gilman and learn all about the West Coast offense.
Yeah.
That's the father, late 50s, early 60s. Even Don Coryell will tell you, I learned it all from Sid Gilman.
Yeah.
He's the father. I think I think we were on the Dolphins schedule in 72. I'm doing that from memory, guys. But somehow I remember they beat us at Yankee Stadium. I think it was a 14-game schedule in those days.
It was.
Yeah. I was just thinking back on it. You know, Abdul and Scott – those are just important questions.
They were.
And somehow I got the feeling right now that we're going to have a lot of time in the off season to answer those questions. What the heck happened? What went wrong? And I've certainly got some opinion, but I'm not going to express it now.
Okay, save it for then.
Go ahead.
No, save that opinion for then, Len.
Okay, yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. We can't lose our way to the playoffs.
Right.
We got to win a game.
Yeah.
Got to win a game. I'm going to ask you this question because Lance was alluding to this just a second ago. We don't have to come up with the answer. I'm just going to ask the question. In order of the last three losses, what do Landon Collins, Antonio Cromartie, and Prince Amukamara have in common?
No turnovers. If
they make two of those three plays,
we
win two games, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, the intercept.
We win two games.
Absolutely.
It's
a pick six by Cromartie.
And the
interception that was dropped by Prince is a game changer.
That's three dropped interceptions.
But it goes along, Lynn, with what we're talking about.
You know, you got to, like somebody just said, make a play. Okay,
yeah.
Look, Sunday night. Dress 46 guys, get 46 healthy guys down there. Trust the game plan. Execute. Play as hard as you can. Let's see where we are when that game is over. You know, one game at a time, as you guys have been alluded to. Here's the two keys, I think. And, Jeff, you talked about it early on. You know, when you do all the extrapolation of the numbers with Eli, and you play it out over 16 games, and you say, well, if he continues at this rate, he's going to have this. It's going to look like a great season.
Yeah.
We need more from Eli.
Yeah.
We need more from Eli.
It's time. There's no question.
He's our guy.
Yeah,
Monday night, we need more from Eli. I talk about above the X's and O's. We need more from Eli. On the defensive side of the ball, God, we got to hide those safeties. Oh, my God, guys. The safeties, oh, geez, it can't get any worse in the NFL. Here's how we do it. I'm looking for the big game, the big, big, big game from Pierre Paul. This is it.
Yep.
He's back home.
Yeah.
He's coming on.
It's going to be hot.
I feel like this is going to be the big three-sack game. We got to scheme our way out of those safeties. We got to play our way out of those safeties. It's not going to happen from the safeties. Guys, the talent's just not there right now. We got to scheme our way out of it. Somebody's got to make some plays along that defensive line.
Yeah.
It's Pierre Paul. We're going to beat the Dolphins. We're going to beat the Dolphins. Let's go, Giants.
All right, Len. Appreciate the phone call.
You know,
thanks so much for chiming in.
I think that the Giants win, too. I think that, you know, that from a matchup standpoint, you know, last week's game against the Jets, I didn't think the Jets and the Giants matched up well against them. I was 50-50 on who was going to win that game. It's just a matter of who made the plays, and obviously the Jets did there with Brandon Marshall at the end and, you know, getting it into overtime. But I think that this game, the Dolphins – do not match up well with the Giants, and I think the Giants come out on top in this game, get back in the winning. They get off this three-game losing streak. They get a little confidence in their belly going forward. And not only we talked about it earlier in the show, for those that didn't listen to us earlier, is that the Giants are going to have the opportunity to know exactly what everybody did in the division going into Monday night. So that's even more important for this team.
Len was right. The Giants did play 1972 Miami Dolphins in week 13. 23-13.
Week 13,
won.
So the
week
second 13. To the last.
Correct, second to last. And then the Giants played the Cowboys in the final week of that season. But, yeah, it was a key game, week 13. So Len was right. Good memory on the part of Len. We never doubt his capabilities. Let's head back to the lines. Want to try to squeeze in another caller or two. Hugo is in New Jersey. Hugo, what's happening?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, how are you doing, Hugo?
I'm doing all right. You know, I've been watching the Giants since 1978, right around the time of the Miracle in the Meadowlands. So I've been through the ups and downs. But I can't ever recall. You know, I'm not questioning Coach's call last week. But I think the big headline this week is the reason why he made that call was because he didn't trust his defense. And I've never heard a coach admit that he was coaching scared. And I really question that, because if he's coaching scared, that kind of probably gets into the mindset of the players, and the players play scared. And that's not the way coaching should work. I mean, we should be telling the players, flush whatever happened in the past down the toilet, have faith and trust in the way you've been taught this, and everyone do your job. I really think that there could be a crisis of confidence, not only on the part of the defense, but on the part of the team. I really, and I'm a big Tom supporter, but I am really shocked at what I heard this week.
Well, I think you make a good point. And, you know, you have to, you know, when you think about that, you say to yourself, you know, I mean, Tom said it when somebody asked him after the game, by the way. And he, you know, he skirted around the issue. But the fact is, he said, have you seen our defense, you know, play lately in those situations? So that tells you right there kind of what you were saying. But you kind of you got to get a little bit on the player side, too, here. You got to say, listen, you know, you guys can't play scared. How about stepping up and making a play that maybe then your coach can say, yeah, you know what, I went for the field goal here because I had faith in my defense. But that's just kind of, you know, I think you're on to something. I think a lot of people saw it that way. I think the coach Coughlin mentioned it, and the fact is that they didn't get it done. Nobody made plays, and they lost the game.
Well, but Hugo, yeah. if we run with your hypothetical, your point about that you think Tom Coughlin doesn't have confidence in this defense, and that may be impacting the mental thoughts of some of the defensive players. As a defensive player, if you put yourself in that position, wouldn't you then want to prove your coach wrong?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that give you more motivation on the flip side? I mean, you could argue it from that standpoint, too.
You know, the margin of error in this league is so slight. If a player goes out there with any doubt in his own mind, and if that doubt is sort of somehow sensed from the top, I think it's detrimental to their performance.
It is.
I don't think they blow their chest out and say, I'm going to prove you wrong. They're sort of saying, these guys watch us in practice. They teach us. There's no faith that the overall system is working, and they think we're going to fail out here. That's how I would feel as a player. I mean, if someone told me, I don't think you do your job very well, you know, most likely that'll lower my morale. And, you know, that's kind of basic management theory, I think.
Well, kind of. Not in football. Football is – a lot of it is done on threat and trying
losing
to,
your job
trying
and so
to
forth.
Motivate the player when he tells you you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
Okay, that's got to throw up, you know, the antenna's got to go up as a player standpoint and go, hey, by the way, they think I stink. And by the way, I probably have, it's called the three-game rule in the National Football League. As players, we know that if you got three games, if you get put on notice, you know, usually it's after that first game, then you got second game and third game. By that third game, if you're not doing what, you're gone. You get, as a veteran, you usually got about those three games.
Well, but veterans understand that, Jeff. I think, Hugo, with your point, you can maybe make the argument with a young guy, a rookie who comes in. Maybe you don't want to experiment with the kid because you're worried. But a veteran guy, I think he's been through so much at
this
point.
Okay, I'll give it to you on the rookie side of it maybe. But I'm sorry. These guys are all grown men.
Yeah.
They're used to getting yelled at.
Correct.
And
hey, guys, by the way, if we had a bunch of first-round talented players out there and you wanted to get more out of them, I can see that. But we're playing with a bunch of the Craig Dolls of the world, and I mean, you gotta tell these guys, if you do it the way we teach it, we're gonna get it right. Forget about what happened in the past. It's all about improvement from this point forward.
Right.
Give me
no
everything
question.
You have.
All right, Hugo. Appreciate the phone
Thanks
call.
For
we gotta let
in.
You go because
we
we're running
it.
Low on time. But I do want to get one more in. James is in Manhattan. James, what's happening? James, we lost James. Okay. No problem. But listen, in terms of mental thoughts and what goes on throughout the minds of players, you can't overlook that. But, you know, as you pointed out, Jeff, there are veterans on this defense. This is not a defense that is surrounded by a bunch of young players. And these veterans have been with a variety of different teams.
Safety is the rookie that's playing.
Landon Collins.
And that's, you know, for the most part, that's it.
Defensive line, veterans. The linebackers are veterans too.
It's all about, and I keep saying this to people, is that, you know, coaches give the game plan to the players. They show them things in practice. They show them things on the sidelines. Okay, they can only do so much. It's then put on the players to execute what they're supposed to do. Now, there's going to be a time and a place when the coaching staff is evaluated just like the players are. And if the coaching staff is not getting done what they're supposed to be done, then they will know about it. Same thing with the players. If the players don't know it, are not getting it done, they're going to know about it. So either way, you have to understand that there's an evaluation process that goes into both sides of it, and that's just the way that the National Football League works, whether it's the Giants or anybody else for that matter.
Now, before we wrap up the program, you select players each and every week.
Yeah, where's my
guy? Via DraftKings. Well, I have it right here on the computer,
okay.
So I wanted to move it into your comfort zone.
I send it to John.
So you can
–
And then he sends it to me. That's the process.
And usually
We're giving away our secrets.
Usually John is here on Fridays, but he's not because they did the old switcheroo.
Yeah, so you have to settle for me, unfortunately.
But fans, here's my Week 14 DraftKings lineup. Now, if you never played DraftKings, they offer weekly fantasy football contests, as we know. No season-long commitment. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. Here's my 14 lineup. Now, I have not gone with this guy all year. Okay, because I figured that, you know what, he's going to make a mistake the week that I pick him, but I'm convinced now that he's the guy. Jameis Winston's putting up the numbers that's showing why he was the number one overall pick. All right, Winston's playing struggling Saints defense, which, by the way, we all know what people can do against the Saints. Look for Jameis Winston.
It's a good matchup on paper.
Huge. He's going to get 18 points, and it's going to cost you $5,500. One of our old friends here, guys, LeSean McCoy is going to going home this week. As he faces his former team, why would I not pick a guy that goes back? There's a revenge factor here, okay? He may want to be going back there. Who knows? But it's going to cost you $6,100, projected for 17 points. And then my wide receiver. Wow, this is an all-star lineup here today.
You got a lot of big names. Yeah,
Al Green. Okay, or excuse me, AJ Green. You can call him Al.
Al.
You can call him, yeah.
Well, you're on a very friendly first name basis.
AJ. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we wore the same number.
Yes.
We wore the same number, 18. I wore 18. So, the Bengals have been red hot this year. I expect the streak to continue this week. Green's playing the Steelers, who gave up an average of, listen to this, 290 yards to an opposing wide receiver. So I expect Dalton and Green to hook up multiple times. So $7,900, 19 points projected, and that's my DraftKings lineup for this week. Draft your own lineup. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT, not contact that you put in your eye. It's contact like on the football field. Claim your free entry today. That's DraftKings.com.
So there you go. Jameis Winston, LeSean McCoy,
and
AJ Green.
As usual, on Tuesday, you will dissect my pick.
Yes, absolutely.
Which
we will
you
critique
and Schmelt
it. We'll
do.
Put it under the microscope. Yes.
Fine.
Indeed.
There you
have
it.
You didn't do too bad last week.
We took it easy on you. Good thing we're not comparing fact and fiction numbers.
Yes, well, that's a whole other thing. We save that for some other entities.
Yeah, our other show.
Here on Giants.com and the radio network. With that being said, appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets throughout the course of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running on Monday, getting you set for the Miami Dolphins at noon Eastern here on Giants.com. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you on Monday. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah,
backfield. He's got through. 35, 30.